family meals, game nights, family prayer, family days, and of course Sunday Mass as a family. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Welcome to Stories from the Heart. I'm Sandra McDevitt. Today on Stories from the Heart, the story of a young woman who gives up her Catholic faith to marry a divorced man. But one day the man comes home with some surprising news for his wife. Stay tuned to find out what the news was and how it affects the couple on another Stories from the Heart. Was utterly devoted to her husband John. Their 5 years of married life had given her a wonderful happiness well worth, she told herself, the sacrifice of her religion. The Catholic Church, she maintained, was ridiculously narrow-minded on the subject of divorce. It should take into account the fact that there had been hard cases such as John's. After a year of marriage, his wife had left him. The law had given John his freedom. When he had met Alice and she had realized that he was falling in love with her, she had a brief struggle with her conscience. Alas, her love for him had succeeded in blinding her to the terrible injury that she did herself. She married him in the city hall, to the horror and grief of her family. John's charm, his devotion, his pathetic happiness with her, the realization that she was making up to him for what he had suffered in the past, all helped Alice to deaden her conscience. Now, after all these years, it had ceased to trouble her. On an evening in the middle of October, John returned home at 5. "You look tired," said his wife as he sank into a chair. "I'm not really, Alice. I want to have a talk with you. We've got about an hour till dinner time. It's something very serious." She folded her sewing and put it away. Little lines appeared in her face. "Now, John, if you're going to leave London..." "No, dear, I'm not. What I want to talk about has nothing to do with the air raids going on over London. At least, not directly." "Whatever is it?" He looked steadily at her. "I've been finding out what Catholicism really means." She stared at him. Her healthy, natural color faded. She was aware of the hurried beating of her heart. John's face was composed, his voice calm. But knowing him so well, she was more alarmed by his unnatural quiet than she would have been by any show of feeling. "I'll explain as quickly as I can about how it all happened. You remember about a month ago, the block offices next to mine were bombed. I was helping to get the injured people out. I didn't tell you much about it. I never have talked about the horrors I've seen since the bombing started. There were several men buried in the wreckage. One of them was a Catholic. And they saw he was dying and sent for a priest. The priest came, quite a young chap. He gave the man the last sacraments as they were trying to get him out from under some beams. I'd never imagined anything like what I saw. The man was suffering terribly, yet he seemed suddenly to be so happy, so peaceful. The priest gave him the sacrament, seemed to make it easy for him to die. I couldn't understand it. There was no chance for him. I'll never forget the scene. The priest bending over the poor fellow, and the way his face lighted up when all the pain went out of it when the priest spoke to him and gave him Holy Communion. Well, the upshot was that I found out which church the priest came from and went to see him." His wife's face was blank, expressionless, as she waited for him to go on. "He answered all my questions. The more I knew, the more I was attracted. And what attracted me most was the dogma of the Blessed Sacrament. It was a revelation to me. I'd never really known what it meant. You and I have naturally never spoken of your religion. Your mother told me a little when she begged me not to marry you, but I didn't pay any attention at the time. But what the priest told me, I understood that. When I saw him give that dying man the sacrament, I saw him give him God, body, soul, and divinity. While the other dying men were groaning and cursing, This man was quite happy, quite resigned. And why not, since he had God to help him die? The truth is, Alice, that when Father Martin explained about the Blessed Sacrament to me, I was already a Catholic in spirit. She caught her breath. Terror chilled her. Immediately she reassured herself, oh, the words did not mean what she had first thought them to mean. Well, I understand, she said quietly. I, as Catholic, is what I am in spirit, of course. He looked steadily at her. Do you believe in the Blessed Sacrament? Oh, yes, she replied. The dismay and grief in his eyes filled her with a dread sense of having blundered badly. What have I said? Why do you look at me like that, John? You still believe, he whispered. That's what I have to reproach myself with. You still believe, yet you've given all up for me. I had to give it up. You know that. I couldn't marry you and still be a Catholic. There was a little silence. Then he said slowly, I cannot be a Catholic in spirit only. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I've got to be received into the Church. There was so much that I realized when I knew what being a Catholic meant. I realized what I'd robbed you of all these years. You can never receive Holy Communion. To me, this is terrible. You mean, she said, you would not have married me? How could I? It would be impossible. When your mother begged me not to marry you, she told me that you'd been a daily communicant. It was just a phrase to me. I didn't know what it meant. Now I know. How could I be happy in our love, knowing I robbed you of the only thing worth living for? And it seems to me that the Blessed Sacrament is either that to us, or it is nothing. How can there be any more to it? I cannot live without you, she replied. You promised to take care of me, always. Nothing can come between us. It's too late, not now. Listen, I can understand what you saw that day made a great impression on you, the priest giving the last sacraments. But you'll get over it. These horrible raids have gotten on your nerves. But as for the wild nonsense about separating from me, you know as well as I you couldn't do it. We have many years of happiness ahead. The Church would take that away from us, take it away from each other. It would kill me to lose you. You are my life. The man looked at her, but his eyes looked past her. The shining eyes followed those of one who sees a vision for the first time and can see nothing else. Even as she clung to him, he was saying, "This is what you don't understand. I could never be happy if I did what you wanted me to. I was happy before, but that was because I didn't know you. And if I weren't happy, you'd suffer. We'd make each other miserable, get on each other's nerves. Our love could never be what it was before I knew." "So you think," she asked sneeringly, "that I'd practice my religion again if we were to separate?" "But," he stared at her, dismayed, "you told me that you hadn't lost your faith." "I would never be a Catholic again, never. It's a cruel, tyrannical religion that can make people suffer as you've suffered. Oh, I assure you, if you leave me, I shall never, to my dying day, want to be a Catholic again. I shall hate everything to do with Catholics. So you see, if you do this thing, you may save your own soul, if you care to put it that way. And I expect your Father Martin did, but you'll not save mine." "But I'm thinking of this, that you used to be a daily communicant before you met me." Memories rose up to torture the woman. She saw herself kneeling in a quiet church in the early mornings, listening to the priest saying the solemn words that called God down upon the humble altar. She saw herself returning to her place, having received Holy Communion. She remembered the peace, the sweetness, the sense of all life's perplexities being smoothed away. As she listened to her husband, other words were echoing in Alice's ears, words that once years ago she had loved. "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. A man who finds it in his joy goes and sells all he has to buy that field." Suddenly she became quite calm. She saw that her hysterical pleadings, her wild threats, had been bad policy. So she said, "In a few days, we'll discuss it again." It was at 5:30 on the following evening that Alice heard the phone ring. and went to answer it. She had not been out all afternoon. London had been raided between 3 and 4 o'clock. Down in the shelter, Alice and a number of other women sat listening to the drone of the engines, the whistle of the bombs, and the anti-aircraft guns had been silent since the fighters of the Royal Air Force were up. As always, Alice had worried more on John's account than on her own. As soon as the all-clear sounded, she had hurried up to her own flat. When the telephone rang, she lifted the receiver with a trembling hand. A woman's voice, speaking from a hospital in the city, bade her to come at once. Her husband had been injured in the bombing. At the hospital, they spoke to her with kind, professional cheerfulness, but she knew there was no hope. John lay propped up on his pillows, his face gray-hued, his eyes closed. Yet he looked peaceful, and not as though he were in pain. She bent over him, whispering his name, and he opened his eyes and smiled at her. "I am so glad," he said faintly. "I was afraid you'd be too late." Too late, so he knew he was dying. He whispered, "You know I couldn't have changed my mind." The woman who had not prayed for years prayed now, that she might have the wisdom to know what to say to him, how to comfort him at the end. "No, John, I know. Of course you couldn't. Nothing can ever come in the way, not even loving each other. Not even that. You were right, John, and I was wrong." The happiness in his dim eyes rewarded her. "Then you'll have your religion again? There'll be nothing in the way?" "Yes, John, I promise you." He sighed contentedly and closed his eyes. Faintly he whispered his last words to her. "It's all been so wonderful, our love. So much happiness." The nurse was beside him. Her fingers found his pulse. His breathing was weak and uneven. She turned to Alice. "Stay, of course," she spoke gently, "but I don't think he will be conscious again." Alice stayed, watching the still face and praying. Half an hour later, in his unconsciousness, John died after receiving the last rites. Every morning in the little church, where as a girl she had worshipped for so many happy years, Alice kneels once more at Mass. Not a day passes but that she finds time to visit the Blessed Sacrament. On her face, as she kneels in prayer, is a look of deep peace and comfort, though grief has worn and aged her. She has recovered something infinitely precious, something which years before she had foolishly bartered for human love, that treasure which John found, and prized so dearly that he would have sacrificed earthly happiness to possess it. Thank you for joining us on Stories from the Heart. Treasure was written by Claire Thornton and published in Messenger of the Sacred Heart magazine. For a copy of this or any of my stories, email Sandra at AveMariaRadio.net. Stories from the Heart is recorded in the studios of Ave Maria Radio. I'm Sandra McDevitt. May God bless the rest of your day.
Missed a show? Not sure if it came from Ave Maria Radio? Go to AveMariaRadio.net. A list of shows and hosts are there. And if you find the show you're looking for, you can hear the whole thing again by going through the Ave Maria Radio audio archives. For 2 years, we've recorded nearly every show from Ave Maria Radio. Just click on the audio archives message located at the center of our homepage. Now you even have more reasons to become a radioactive Catholic by going to AveMariaRadio.net.
He was sentenced to life in prison, yet behind bars he found freedom. Freedom in Christ. Tom Naimi was eventually set free after serving 18 years for his crimes, but it was while in prison he found his call to evangelize. Blessed by the Holy Spirit during